programa. Hello and welcome to Dynamite Neddy. It's a retro games podcast where a couple of old pals get together and talk about a couple of old games. The voice you're hearing just now is myself, Mick Clockerty. Joining me, as always, we have Mr. Andy Mack.
Konnichiwa.
And Mr. Mick McCormick.
How's it going?
Hey lads, what you's been up to? Any good games on the go at the minute? Any news? Anything you're just bursting to talk about? What's happening?
So, apart from being holiday, sunning myself in the south of Spain, more importantly, I have finally, after 110 hours, completed Elden Ring, which I'm very pleased with myself about.
Hey, I'm editing this one, or I would add in, like, fanfare or whatever, but was there a sense of accomplishment, or are you just kind of glad that it's over, or how do you feel?
I mean, I've never really played any of these FromSoft games before, so it was a bit intimidating experience, spending a lot of time on fucking guides and walkthroughs and that, and getting my arse handed to me by certain bosses and that, but it's a pretty good achievement.
No, what I would worry about is, you know, if you tell somebody that's into them about this, you know, like a FromSoft hipster, are they not just going to hit back with like, oh, a baby could complete Elden Ring? Come back to me when you've beat Dark Souls 2, mate. You know, that kind of patter.
I mean, there's always these doubts in my head. I mean, there's a few things that are probably a Dark Souls purist would probably say, or you've not actually completed the game, because I did use summons, which is sometimes frowned upon. It's part of the game, it's a mechanic of the game, but some folk consider it cheating.
Aye.
And I've not defeated the optional boss, Malenia, who is meant to be, like, the hardest boss, not only in this game, but, like, of all the games that have been made by FromSoft.
You can get the basket on his head guy to come in and kill her for you.
Aye, let me solo her. Yeah, I've been considering it. But I'm leaving that open because there's the expansion pack coming out, I think, later this year. Gives time to revisit it and kind of do some of the quests I missed and things like that. You can still do all that before you, like, actually proper finish the game, or you can, like, do a new game plus and go back and play as a different character or something.
Ah, very good.
A different build. I went for, like, a kind of... I didn't want to do my usual thing I do in RPGs of going, like, your, you know, blasting wizard type, because I felt like I probably wouldn't get the most genuine Souls experience if I wasn't, like, getting up in people's faces and slashing them and that. So I went a kind of samurai character. I had dexterity as my main stat, and I was cutting about with, like, two katanas that could make people bleed and do hundreds of damage, and doing a lot of rolling and dodging and things like that. So, yeah, if I do play it again, if I have another 110 hours to kill, then I'd maybe go for a wizard or a paladin or something a bit different.
Don't get Andy started on a samurai. their war crimes are numerous. Mr. MacArthur, what about yourself?
Aye, I've been trying to get my ROMs back on my Xbox. Microsoft are heavy trying to stop it from happening, but you can download RetroArch on your Xbox and transfer all your ROMs onto it, essentially. But for whatever reason, they're just not happy with it. So what you're having to do is you're having to download RetroArch and put all your ROMs on it, on local storage on your Xbox. And then at any point, it could be 2 hours, 2 days, 3 days, whatever, you'll try to open it one day and it'll just say, you can't open this app. And then you need to do it all again. So it's a pain in the arse, man. It's starting to become not worth it, to be honest. They're very clumsy on it.
Is it kind of an arms race between, like, the folk that program the app and the folk that work at Microsoft, like, kind of releasing updates to counteract each other and stuff like that?
Sort of. I mean, the Xbox Series X and even the white one as well, the S, they can emulate anything up to, like, PS3, man. I think people have even had PS4 games running on it. So if you bring out something like that, that wipes out the eShops, the retro eShops, or the retro games for Nintendo, which will not go down well. All the mini systems become kind of obsolete. Just everything to do with making money out of retro games could easily just become obsolete, because all people need to do is wait until a machine, the Xbox, gets down under £100, and then they've got a machine that will just literally play any game ever made.
Aye, there's a kind of cottage industry of, like, reselling you these things, like, as you say, your mini consoles and your kind of going on an app store and buying, like, a PS1 game that you play on your PS4 and it costs £20, and you could, like, get it for free, or, like, find a copy of it on eBay for a fiver and stuff like that. It's banking on the fact that emulation is, like, made artificially difficult for you so that they can sell you the shit again.
Aye.
That's it, man. I mean, you can put your console into developer mode. It costs £20 today, and then you get the hassle of switching it off and on developer mode, and
that lets you run like unlicensed code on it and stuff like that.
Pretty much, aye. It lets you use a USB plugin as well, so you can just use that as a storage.
Right.
When it works, it's good, man, because the Xbox pad is good on any sort of emulator, any system. You can use your Xbox pad or your PlayStation pad to turn it into an N64 pad or even a GameCube pad. It's got enough buttons. But it's just this fucking faffing about, man. And I don't think it's going to get any easier because, I mean, they make fortunes out of selling these old games, don't they? So.
Aye, that's it. So about the dollar at the end of the day.
Yep.
Kind of think of much gaming-wise that I've got to shout out. I've got a few wee bits and pieces that I've been fucking about with here and there. But I will say that last week I went to Block to watch local hero DJ Lost Cosmonaut playing a set. And it was, Mick, you were magic, so you were.
Thanks very much. Glad you enjoyed it. I had a good time.
Totally missed it, too, man. I was wanting to go up and see that as well.
Just all the... It's fairly mesmerising just watching them work, you know, fucking about with all these dials and that, and the setup with all the wires plugged into different things. And
that's cool, right?
Aye, it's cool.
It's a good conversation piece.
Aye.
But I'll let you know if there's any other ones coming up. Maybe possibly even plug them on here. God knows we talk about plenty of other non-related gaming things, so I should be free to just plug my musical side as well.
Aye, and that's what I'm wanting to do here. A plug for any of you loreheads out there who haven't followed McCormick on your socials under DJ Lost Cosmonaut. Get it done, because it's cool shit. And there's arguably a gaming flavour to some of the stuff, I would say.
Definitely a big inspiration.
Aye.
Lost Cosmonaut Techno on Instagram, one word. Check it out.
There you go. Right, well, we dive two-footed into our games for the day, or has anybody got any other breaking news, any discussion topics that we really need to tackle here?
Nah, I don't think so, not on my side anyway.
Yep, go ahead.
Right, we are going to kick off with Little Big Adventure for DOS/PlayStation. McCormick, why did you pick this game for myself?
I'm sorry, man. I had kind of vague memories of this game as being quite a kind of quirky and colourful sort of adventure.
It is. Oh, no, no apology necessary. Honestly, sorry, continue where you are.
This was a Barra's game for sure. I had this on one of those lovely compilation discs where they cram as many PC games as they can onto 650 megabytes and give you a wee menu to choose between them.
Aye.
Probably wasn't the game that I bought it for. I probably bought it for maybe a Grand Theft Auto or a Duke Nukem or something, but it came with a Little Big Adventure. I remember finding it kind of fascinating, if a bit baffling, not 100% wondering how to play it, but it's one of these ones that's kind of stuck in my mind. It's just quite a distinctive thing. I thought it'd be an interesting one to revisit it. I had a quick go of it and still fairly baffling. Wonder if Mick had a better time with it.
Well, it's funny that baffling is your takeaway word there, right? So I'm going to... Horns up, I'm familiar with the game, right? Little Big Adventure was always a kind of... was a source of mild fascination for me when I was away. I wasn't obsessed with it. I would say mild fascination. I would have definitely thought about it sometimes.
Aye.
My cousin had it, and he had the DOS version. And I think I played it at his house at quite a young age. I think I played it like well before. It came out in DOS in 94, and then it came out in Europe on the PlayStation in 97. I think I played it at his house before it even came out on the PlayStation, and I don't think I had much exposure to adventure games at that point, so it seemed like an awful big world to me, do you know what I mean? This kind of mad thing. And then when I was a wee bit older, I remember being surprised to see that it was on a PlayStation 1 demo disc. So I played the opening bit. Yeah, I'll get into this in more detail later, but the opening bit where you're escaping from a kind of asylum for political prisoners, I think that was on a demo disc. I played through that a couple of times, but both of those, being a young child and then being a wee bit older, boiled down to the same thing of kind of being a bit baffled and running about aimlessly and not really knowing what to do. Going back to this all these years later, I would say, and I don't know if you'll agree with me on this, Mick, and this is quite a vague thing that I'm going to be talking about, but it's got a definite whiff of the Euro about it. Do you know what I'm talking about? Where, like, a Euro platformer, where, like, James Pond or Alfred Chicken or something, there's just this inherent weirdness about them.
There's a word that gets used, and it's more talking about usually RPGs, but there's the term Eurojank, which kind of refers to things that are maybe like a wee bit cheaper and a wee bit shoddier than their kind of big hitters coming out of Japan and North America, but also have their own kind of weird charm about them. I think this definitely falls into that bracket.
But I don't know if I would call it buggy. I think when you're used to playing the bulk of your stuff coming from Japan or the United States, when something hasn't been made there, choices in mechanics, aesthetics, and even the story make it feel a bit alien.
Aye, this is a French game in France. Aye. In a lot of ways, like, French culture is kind of insular in a way. I think they've got a certain pride in their own, like, music and art and even, like, philosophy and that. And this kind of excludes things or kind of... There's a sense that there's maybe, like, something unique or special about French culture that is kind of protected for the outside world and doesn't really always make it its way out. And the same thing was true for games. There's a whole kind of parallel kind of games industry in France and a lot of quite interesting stuff that I'm not super familiar with, but occasionally it kind of makes its way out. I think this just adds to the kind of the alienness of it, is that it is coming from another culture, really.
Aye. The plot of this game is somewhere between what, a dystopian science fiction and an orientalist fairy tale. I don't think it's too heavy on the orientalism, to be fair. Your protagonist is a guy called Twinson. He sports like a ponytail and this mad like blue robe. The planet that he lives on is called Twin Sun. So the character and the planet have the same name, but it's spelled differently.
It's not confusing at all.
France, why are you doing this? I don't understand. Twin Sun is controlled by a dictator called Dr. Funfrock, who is a genius. Dr. Funfrock was able to control the planet of Twin Sun with two inventions, cloning and teleportation. So Funfrock makes clones of people on the planet, but the clones have 100% loyalty to him, right, and they don't have any personalities or that. He uses these clones as an army and police to suppress everybody, and the clones can also just teleport to any corner of the planet. So if there's ever any dissent kicking up somewhere, just teleport a clone army in. That's settled.
Aye, and you see this at the start of the game as well, where like if there's a kind of stealth section at the start, and if you get caught, then all of a sudden this baddie that looks like an elephant teleports in and shoots you.
That elephant is a grobo.
Oh, I forgot. There's different races, isn't there?
So the planet of Twin Sun is home to four races. They are called Quetches, Spheros, Grobos, and Rabobunnies.
Which one are you again?
So Twinson is a Quetch. Quetches, right, are basically human, except they all have those weird ponytails that the main characters. I don't know why. Rabobunnies are these kind of giant skinny rabbits that they're a bit kind of like Bugs Bunny. They've got patter. Grobos are these big glaky elephant cunts that are like, I don't know, like they've got that kind of voice. And then spheros are like spheres.
So the story is that you've been getting some sort of bizarre dreams that tell you to go on a mission, and then for some reason the secret police have kind of clocked the fact that you're having these dreams of dissent, and then they've locked you up.
So this gets us into, I suppose, the motif of the game. You've got a kind of science versus magic thing. That's, I would say, that's your underlying plot here. Dr. Funfrock has outlawed like religion, folklore, and mysticism.
Aye.
So our main man Twinson, he's locked up in the asylum because he's been having prophetic dreams. He dreams of, like, riding this dragon and using magic powers to defeat the ultimate evil and stuff like that. Doesn't he fly in Dr. Funfrock's regime? So he gets locked in an asylum. You escape the asylum, and then Twinson's Mrs. Zoe gets kidnapped by the baddies. This is your kind of culty adventure, leading Twinson on a round-the-globe trip to defeat the evil and rescue his missus. And that's your kind of setup, your weird races and your Frenchness.
So the thing that kind of confused me the most about this game, and I think you might have possibly had a better experience with this, with your love of games like Resident Evil and the like, and the Tomb Raider, and old games that have what are derogatorily known as tank controls. This game kind of has tank controls in that pressing forward will take you in the direction that you're pointing, and pressing left and right will rotate you left and right, rather than you going in the direction that you press. So the game kind of controls like that. You've also got like these different stances that your character takes. So rather than having a button to punch...
Hang on. There are four behaviour modes, I'll have you know, modes, according to the manual. You've got normal, aggressive, athletic, and discreet. Normal, that lets you talk to cunts, pick up things, interact with the environment. Aggressive lets you batter people, clues in the name, I suppose. Athletic, you can run and jump. That's used for platforming, which is a fucking nightmare. You have to do that later in the game. And discreet just makes them sneak, so that's used for stealth. So you've got tank controls, and it's quite good on the PlayStation. You can use the shoulder buttons to quickly switch between the different behaviour modes. On your old DOS, you had to awkwardly go into a menu and click to change it. I think the game's a wee bit better served by having like a hotkey to switch between them.
Between the tank controls and this behaviour system, it's kind of alien because you're used to having access to all the actions you can do, maybe on like one button each. In this one, if you want to talk to somebody, you have to switch to normal. If you want to batter somebody, you have to switch to aggressive. I found that took a wee bit of getting used to. It's an interesting idea, but it definitely made navigating some of the levels seem a lot more complicated than it needed to be.
I picked this up okay. I think if that was the only hurdle for me, I would have got on with this game, nae bother.
Yeah.
I think the tank controls and the system that they use in this, okay, maybe you could argue they didn't know whether they wanted to be an action game or an adventure game, and you've got a weird kind of Frankenstein of them. But in some ways, it's ahead of its time. If we look at the development of the adventure game after this into the late 90s, early 2000s, don't know, man. Little Big Adventure came out before Grim Fandango and Monkey Island 4. So I'm saying, those games had tank controls.
That's true, yeah. And one thing that I did quite like about these different stances is they all come with their own wee animations and sound effects as well. So like when you're in the normal mode, you walk fairly normally. Although I would argue that Twinson, in his animations, he's just a weird-looking guy. Like, if you seen Twinson coming like, from the other side of a crowded room, you'd be like, is he all right?
he's a weird wee fella, isn't he?
He is. Like, his normal stance, he walks around fairly normally. When he's aggressive, he looks steaming. Like, he's just kind of like wobbling about with his kind of fists up in there, and he's kind of leering at folk, and he makes this noise like...
He constantly makes a growling noise. The best stance in terms of sound design is the sneaky one, because it makes a quite cartoony. He creeps about on his tiptoes.
He makes this kind of pizzicato, sort of like violin sort of sound as well.
Yeah.
And then the athletic one, he's kind of flailing all over the place, and it's quite funny looking. And he runs on the spot as well, doesn't he? He doesn't stay still.
If you're playing this game for more than, I don't know, half an hour, you are going to be in athletic stance a lot, because it's a lot quicker than walking. So I tend to find I'm just running everywhere, because my life's too short to be walking about a French planet, innit?
Aye, fear of a French planet.
The thing for me that's the big problem with the controls, I think for the most part, the four behavioural modes and the tank controls are grand, right? Bit archaic, but that's the type of thing that I can get into, right? For whatever reason, I don't have a problem with it. It's the bulk of the combat in this game. I basically had a few experiences of it and just went, oh, this is where me and Little Big Adventure part ways. And that comes down to the ball.
Oh.
Andy's having flashbacks here. I didn't even get as far as getting the ball. What is the ball?
So, after you've escaped the asylum, which, by the way, that's a good wee tutorial bit. It teaches you all the different stuff. You learn to sneak, you learn to batter a guard to take his uniform and all that. Good stuff. You get back to Twinson's house, you hide... Zoe gets kidnapped by a couple of Grobo clones or whatever. Then you root through his drawers, you get his robe, and you get his magic sphere. And then the bulk of the combat in this game, the main method of attacking enemies involves throwing... It's basically a bouncy ball, and you have to control the angle and the trajectory of the ball and nail enemies with it. But with this kind of isometric viewpoint... you're never hitting anything, man. The ball's bouncing about all over the place. It's really frustrating.
So you're basically like golfing into the baddies, is that what you're doing?
Yeah, pretty much, aye. Like squash or something.
Is this an early PlayStation game or something? It's got that kind of Final Fantasy 7 model aspect to it.
It's a port. It's a DOS game for 94. and it got ported onto a PlayStation in 1997.
Quite early 3D. I mean, quite impressive graphics for its time. It would have been before the kind of rise of your 3D cards and that, so it couldn't push a whole load of polygons.
It looks like a short period where I think they should have stuck with 2D for maybe a year or so until they could at least work out what textures are.
I don't think it looks that bad, especially for...
I like the backgrounds and all that. As I said, it does look like Final Fantasy a wee bit.
It's got a distinctiveness about it. It's dated in a lot of ways, but I don't know, it's got a bit of charm, a bit of distinctiveness. For me, it all comes down to the ball. I didn't like the ball.
Does the aggressive mode become kind of obsolete once you get this ball? You know, you don't need to go out and punch folk so much anymore.
I think at the end of the game, you get a sword, and that requires you to switch back into aggressive mode. But aye, the only way to defeat the clones, who are the bulk of the baddies, is using the ball, pretty much.
Because what I found when I was escaping that wee asylum bit, and then you're cutting about the town that's kind of occupied by the military, they would be shooting at you, and you'd basically just get stunlocked by whatever projectiles they were using, and you couldn't really get close up enough to properly have a melee with them.
So imagine that, but instead you're aiming a ball at them, and you're not getting a split second to throw it, because they just keep firing flurries of bullets at you.
That's pretty miserable. So, like, as well as the kind of combat and stuff and a wee bit of stealth, you kind of mentioned this is an adventure game. I know you did have an inventory. Like, is there a bit of kind of puzzle solving and kind of going back and forth with items and things? Or how does the balance lead between, like, action and adventure?
Yeah, there's some quite basic puzzles. When your girlfriend gets kidnapped, you know, if you talk to a few people running about your house, they say, well, the people at drinking a local tavern, see everything. All right, I'll go to the local tavern, talk to a guy in there, and he says, I might remember that I've seen something if I could have a drink, so you need to go and buy him a drink. Very much stuff on that level.
Aye.
I think this might have some of that nonsense where if you didn't pick up a specific item a way back, you can end up like getting stuck, you know, like locking the game for yourself or whatever. I think it might have a few instances of that as well.
It was like an ID card in the asylum, which I nearly missed, I think.
Aye, you need to get a uniform in the asylum as well. I died a couple of times before I worked that out. But aye, nae harm to it, but I don't think it's a recommendation for me. I enjoyed the nostalgia factor and the kind of otherworldliness of it, you know, the weird Frenchness. But I didn't play it for more than 2 hours, if I'm being honest. If you like the idea of how weird it sounds yourself, maybe give it or the sequel a bash. I don't know if the sequel is maybe better regarded and, you know, they've corrected a few things that's wrong with the first gen. But you might get on better with it than me, but aye, there you go.
Maybe on for watching a Let's Play of or something rather than playing if you're that interested.
Aye, hearing the weird fucking voice acting and all that.
Well, the voice acting's pretty stinking. maybe better in the original French.
Right. Well, I think that brings us nicely on to our next game of the episode, which is F-Zero-X. Andy Mac, why did you pick this one for Mr. McCormick?
Right, so F-Zero is an interesting series. It's sort of not on the same level as Mario, Zelda, or even Metroid. It's not forgot about, but it could be sort of described as Nintendo's other racing game.
Would you call it a Nintendo B-side?
You could do, aye. Nintendo's obviously got a few of them that we spoke about before, but this is one. It's interesting because it's a one-player racing game. I don't know F-Zero X. I remember playing this years ago when I got it out of a Blockbuster. I think I had a couple of weekends with it. And I remember thinking, this isn't my thing because I'm not a big racing game heed. But, I remember finding it kind of interesting that there was a sequel to SNES one, so I thought, I'll see what Mick thinks of this N64 classic, apparently it is.
It turned out a wee bit lukewarm there. Yeah, as you're saying, F-Zero X, despite the fact that it's actually made by like the mainline sort of Nintendo software team, Nintendo EAD, which can count Shigeru Miyamoto in its ranks, it's never really had the same love is some of its other series. This game came out on the N64 in 1998, fairly late in the console's life cycle. So yeah, I don't really know how well played and well liked it was, but I'll kind of go through the kind of journey that I went on with it. For me, this game, I would describe as a grower.
Right? Okay.
Have we discussed this dichotomy before on the podcast? Is this just kind of like some of our patter, or is this quite well-known expression? You have to explain what I mean here.
I would assume people know what grower and shower is, but maybe just for the benefit of our one US listener.
Seems like something off a fucking Porky's and American Pie or something, so I'm sure it will translate.
Okay, this is a very vulgar comparison about the male genitalia. Basically, a shower is something that when you first see it, yeah, it's quite impressive, right? It's kind of, it shows how impressive it is right away. Whereas a grower may not look very impressive, but once it's fully erect, fully out there, it's actually pretty impressive. Even there, so
I just got a picture of your McCormick's got wizards over there. I'm just imagining what is it for a piss. I'm just hearing these dulcet tones coming through the loft. Going, what the fuck's
going on? I told you I would have been lost for a reason, right?
Anything else they had, Professor Erection?
Right. So all I'm going to say is that a grower, you know, given time and proper blood flow, is actually even more impressive than a shower might be in many cases.
But at the count of three, you have to say what one you've got. One, two, no, I'm kidding.
Right, so the reason for this journey, I booted up this game. It was while I was on holiday, and we were having a wee kind of break for the sun in the hotel room, and I'd stuck at the Steam Deck and had a quick bash of F-0X. And I turned this game on, and I'd played similar games, you know. This is a kind of a high-speed sort of racing game.
Wipeout, Extreme G.
In the manner of Wipeout or something along those lines, aye. So I turned it on, kind of expecting one of those games. And graphically, I wasn't particularly impressed, to be honest. There was only a few kind of polygons cutting about the screen. You don't have these big kind of expansive landscapes that you're racing on. It's really just like a suspended like roller coaster in the air. With these kind of low polygon little crafts, and also there's a kind of skybox and like a bit below you, like underneath, which kind of looks like a SNES sort of backgrounds and sprites, kind of like the original F-Zero. So I was racing against all these different opponents, crashing quite a lot, and my ship was exploding a wee bit, and I wasn't quite getting what was going on, so I left it for a little while. But the next time I picked it up, I actually had a completely different experience, and I think that the trigger here was the fact that first time I played it, Mrs. was sleeping in the room and I didn't have any headphones, so I didn't have the music on.
Aye.
Turning the music on actually unlocked a bit of a revelation for me, because you've got that absolutely banging fucking speed metal soundtrack going in the background, and then the first stage of like the easiest kind of cup in the game, Mute City, has a completely iconic fucking metal tune.
Mute City is one of the best video game soundtrack tunes of all time, man. It is.
Yeah.
I'm not a big F-Zero guy, but Mute City would be in my top 10 gaming tunes, sorted.
I always thought that Mega Man tunes and F-Zero tunes could better change with each other. They get the same sort of kind of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
Aye, Mega Man X, man. You know the... You're running about that fucking cityscape and that at the start. It's got a touch of the F-Zero about it.
These are one of the, I guess, two game series that are really carrying the torch for like heavy metal in video game soundtracks. Like before you had proper CD quality sound. Then they were trying to make the sound of like guitars and drums and that on sound chips. But with this game, it's got surprisingly like quite, you know, good quality actual, not pre-recorded music, like not really sound chip stuff, but it actually sounds like a band. And I think it's like, this game's a bit of a technical achievement in ways that I'll kind of talk about later, but yeah, they managed to compress down the sound of like proper kind of band playing these metal tracks and that into like low enough quality and like mono sound that they could fit on the cartridge. Like, you didn't have the luxury of a full CD that you would on the PlayStation, but they've got this kind of banging metal soundtrack. As I was saying, Mute City's is pure iconic tune, which you might recognise for the Smash Bros. Games, some other Nintendo stuff as well. But this kind of gave us the impetus to kind of see this game in a bit of a new light. What I was experiencing was just the pure adrenaline rush of playing this game, which runs at 60 frames per second, which is unheard of for like for games at this time, especially racing games. Like, this was the first racing game that ran at 60 frames per second. So it's rapid, it's really smooth, and you're going through these kind of big roller coaster like tracks. Pure adrenaline rush, as Andy was saying earlier. The games I was kind of comparing this to in my head in terms of like high speed racing games is Wipeout, which I mentioned before, and also a game we played a few weeks ago, which is Star Wars Pod Racing.
Aye.
And initially, as I was saying, the graphics, not even as good as games that came out like 3 years before it. Like, graphically, I would say it's like less impressive even than something like Mario Kart or like a Wipeout on the PlayStation. All these kind of nice textures and kind of landscapes behind you in that.
One of the things that I had the Orion 64 to kind of compensate for its lack of having a CD storage capacity was games would often have like fog, like a bad draw distance. So what they would normally do is they would cut down the polygon count in racing games so that you could see further ahead.
Aye, for the Star Wars game, which came out like around about the same time, they had fog, but it was done in a kind of clever way. It kind of things faded in for the distance, whereas this, they're kind of just like popping into existence for nothing. What I was kind of realising is that they've kind of made these sacrifices in terms of the number of polygons on screen for the sake of, well, the frames per second, the speed and the smoothness of the game, and also the fact that you're racing against like 29 other racers that are all kind of polygonal craft. And that's actually a big part of the thing. This actually contributes to like some of the depth in the strategy in this game, because as well as like going around the courses, you're also avoiding like so many other drivers as well. And when your car in this game gets damaged, you can blow up and that's your game over. Like, you don't just go back a few places and respawn or that. Like, that's the race done. Yeah, it's a real concern, like kind of dodging and weaving between all the other cars on the track. And the game is quite good at exploiting this as well. Like, the tracks are really cleverly designed. And one of the things that they do is that there's sections where the track just gets narrower and narrower, and it kind of squeezes everybody into this small space. It's really important that you can get past these other drivers. And you can also do a wee bit of the road rash sort of stuff as well, where there's moves with the shoulder buttons where you kind of barge into enemies, or you can do a kind of spin attack and like just knock people off the track or completely out of the game. So that's a kind of valid strategy as well, isn't it?
It's the thinking man's white boot. White boot, gain you all the guns and all that. I think it makes it a bit too easy to take out other people, whereas you need to think about it a wee bit more in F-Zero.
Aye, this is about the kind of the high speed and the actual, like, you need to be a good racer to be able to like, do these strategies as well. With Wipeout, it kind of borrows a bit for your Mario Kart and that. You've kind of, it's just like a reskin version of like your shells and things like that with Wipeout.
You learn the tracks and you learn when there's a good stretch of cowpaw coming up that you can drive over and get some health back.
Aye, exactly. You've got kind of boost pads on the ground. You've got these, as I say, the cowpaw, which recharges your boost and also recharges your health effectively going around the track so that you don't blow up. But usually that's in a section where you kind of have the choice of a boost or a heal. So if you've got plenty of energy left, you can just go right down the middle and get the boosts. And otherwise you might prefer to heal up at the risk of going a bit slower. The tracks and that I think are really well designed. They make really good use of like the just being in 3D, by that you can kind of loop the loops going on. Sessions that I was talking about, that crowds everyone together, sometimes in like pipes, sometimes like kind of half pipes as well, where you kind of got to use gravity and kind of bank up the sides of them. There's one track called Big Blue where the whole track becomes like this kind of cylinder, just like a big kind of pipe that you're kind of around the outside of.
Aye.
I think we're a dolphin reference here.
Aye. That's quite an interesting track as well, because there's boost pads at like the underside of this pipe, which you can exploit, but also if you end up in the underside, you're not going to reconnect with the track. So it's a kind of risk and a reward thing.
Aye, well, you get the same thing with your Calpol, as we're calling it, versus the boost pads. You know, if you take the boost pads versus healing, again, that's risk-reward as well, isn't it?
Aye, exactly. Yeah, and there's jumps as well, but also when you're in there, you can control your craft in like three dimensions, so you can kind of tilt it forward and you're kind of going a bit faster, but you might kind of hit a bit of the track at a dodgy angle or something. So aye, clever, and it's, you feel as if you're going fast as fuck, but also there's like quite a lot of considerations you've got to make in terms of like the strategy of the race as well.
Always get that's the main kind of thing that you're meant to get for this game is the speed.
Yeah.
This game is designed to make you feel like you're going rapid. Like there's no acceleration. It's just like rapid, zero to rapid.
Yeah, you get a choice when you're starting out. You can pick them from various drivers in their own wee cars. They're quite a cool art style as well. Like it's in those sections, it's kind of reminds me of like 2000 AD almost. Kind of old comic books.
Captain Falcon just looks like Judge Dredd, man.
Aye, it does. It's like not very Japanese to me. It's not like anime. So it doesn't really remind me much of anime, but it's more like a kind of grungier sort of like comic. But you got a choice of various different drivers, and then it's not just who you like the look of best. Like, they do handle very differently. You've got, like, different attributes for each car. Body is, like, how kind of strong it is and how resistant damage it is.
Aye.
You get boost, which is how fast you go when you're using the boost. And you've got grip as well, which is how likely you're to kind of spin out on the turns. So I went this one called Jodie Summers, her name is, and her motor is called White Cat. And that's got a very high grip, which I found a lot more easy to handle. And especially with these kind of twisty and turny tracks, I kind of made the best use of her, I think.
I don't agree with this. See, pure going, looking at other stats and that. I played this probably when I was like 12 or 13 or something. You pick a funny alien, right? It doesn't matter how the control, that's how you do it.
There's a wealth of funny aliens, man, if that's your bag as well. Who's that guy, Pico? Who I think is meant to be like a kind of turtle alien, but he kind of looks a bit like a xenomorph as well.
Ah, he's cool.
He's 100 years old and he's a bounty hunter.
You've got Mr. EAD, who's basically like a big funny fat guy. Aaron always used to like going him.
Who's the cunt of pink cunt looks like he's out of Dragon Ball Z? Big fucking heat.
Sebulba.
There's also a guy that looks like fucking Starwolf. Star Fox, Star Wolf.
Well, you've got, this is, I didn't know if we were going to get into this, but there's a bit of a Bermuda Triangle thing here, where, as Andy Mack will tell you, in Lilac Wars, Fox's dad is called James McLeod, he's called Fox McLeod, and the good ending, he leads you to, is it Planet Venom or something like that? But in F-Zero, you can unlock James McLeod as an F-Zero racer, who is a human man, but with kind of a fox-like appearance, and he wears pretty much a Star Fox uniform, man. See if you look him up, he looks like Fox.
Maybe in Star Fox he was just pretending to be a fox because they just thought it was a bit weird that as a human he had shagged a human-eyed fox and had a half fox and half human child. Maybe this is his real identity, he's this kind of fly-by-night sort of high-speed illegal racer guy.
Would it not make it better if he just had like a Star Fox in there? Put a Star Fox in it. Where's the harm in it? You don't need to make it a human. There's other aliens in the game.
There must have been a lot of downtime, didn't they? See, they're sitting on a great fox just waiting for their phone to ring. It could be doing these races, doing whatever this is.
There's only so many wars going on in the solar system at any given time for your mercenary services to be profitable.
Aye.
If you remember me talking about the bold Star Wars Episode 1 racer, I don't mind the fucking full title of that game. I'm very sorry. If you remember me talking, and the one thing I said was that I would like to have seen more shenanigans in this kind of high-speed, dangerous, illegal, off-the-books racing. And that is one thing that I kind of did get for F-Zero X. I kind of wish it played like this because the races in this, like, they probably feel dangerous. Like, the fact that there's so many different motors, the fact that you can crash out and that's kind of game over for you, it feels like the sort of thing that would be, like, pure unregulated, like the governments would be banning and stuff like that because it's so fucking dangerous.
Well, for what you get from the wee blurbs you get and the instructions or when you complete the game from these different racers, they are all like bounty hunters and smugglers and for the fringes of society, aye.
I was really enjoying this game. I started getting to appreciate the sort of the nuances that kind of set it apart for other games and along this. I started appreciating that there was a kind of rhythm and a structure to the races that was a bit different. You've got different segments of the race where different things happen. You have access to different abilities and kind of different tones. And what I had a bit of a revelation that the structure of this game actually isn't from the future, from the far-flung future. It's actually based on a much older sport, which is the Grand National.
Ah.
If you think about it, right, at the start, you've got 30 horses or high-speed fucking spaceships, right? And then it's chaos. Like, people are banging into each other. Jockeys are falling off. This kind of weeds out the men for the boys. So at this point of the race, you've kind of weeded out like half the competitors. They've all bumped into each other. The chaos is over. And in F-Zero, this is the point of the game, the second lap, where you get access to your boost. And that's the part where the remaining racers can kind of separate themselves out, get a bit further ahead, and it kind of separates things out from the pack. It's not all close together. You've got a bit more space between yous. You still got to be careful because you can still crash out. You can still crash and burn. And then in the very last stretch, in the third round, you've got your boost on the go. You can just go hell for leather, basically. And that's where you kind of try and get that photo finish at the very end.
So like horse racing, you don't necessarily want to be at the front of the pack at the end of lap one. You just want to be comfortable enough position.
I generally didn't find myself like getting to the front until the very end. Possibly this is just a function of how I was playing it. I would usually go like quite low acceleration, but high maximum speed. But I found that it was easier to get ahead once like the kind of rammy of the start is finished and a lot of people have kind of done themselves in, and you can just breeze towards the finish.
Are we dealing with any of this rubber banding nonsense here?
I mean, I don't know. I know it was very commonplace in these kind of games. On the higher difficulties, you would occasionally get kind of overtaken if you were going pretty fast. But I never felt like it was rubber banding. I felt like it maybe just like, oh, I hadn't gone round the track as fast as I could have, so maybe they've just made up a bit of time.
Aye. I think there is a bit of... See, in most racing games, even like the most advanced ones, like Project Gotham and all that, and even like Metropolis Street Racer and Gran Turismo, I think there's an element of rubber banding in all these games.
Aye.
Like, there's got to be, do you know what I mean?
The AI in video games is always constantly cheating. You can gripe about it if you want, but it's usually done for a pretty good reason. Like, they've realised playtesting the game that it's not as fun if the AI is just playing it completely straight.
I don't think rubber banding is a bad thing. Do you know, if it's done right, you don't even realise that they're doing it. It's just in some jankier or crappier racing games, it's really apparent. Where you're like, where the fuck did he come from? You know, I've lapped him twice and all of a sudden he's right behind me type thing.
Yeah, I'll see what rubber banding is, just in case people don't...
It's a practice that's used in the creation of racing games, and basically it means that if you are doing well, then the enemies kind of automatically get a bit of a buff and they get a bit of a speed boost and they can go a bit faster. Conversely, if you're doing badly, folk in front of you, the AI players will go a bit slower to give you time to catch up.
Aye.
It's not the Irish comedians who wear poly bags over their heads. It's rubber bandits.
Rubber bandits, aye.
That's unrelated.
Mario Kart's a good example. If you play it on one player, even if you play it on two player, man, you get things that slow you right down. Like the famous one is, you get hit with a big fucking pow at the end.
The blue shell.
Oh, I agree, but that's the other, isn't it?
So, I've mostly been talking about the GP mode, Grand Prix mode in F-Zero. That's the main one I've been playing, where you have like three different cups that you can play in. I think there's like six levels each. And then if you win three of them, like on easy mode, you unlock some more characters. Then on medium mode, you unlock more characters, and that's how it kind of progresses for there. And there's some other kind of bonus ones you unlock as well, like a bonus difficulty and a randomly generated map. And then there's a couple other modes as well. There's like a time trial sort of mode, one called Death Race. And Death Race focuses on the kind of combat side of things. So you're just kind of constantly going round and round this track, and it doesn't matter if you're first or last or whatever. The point is to like defeat all the other cars.
Last car standing type thing,
and
innit?
This is how, when you get to kind of pull out these moves, like your kind of spin attack and your sort of nudge attack to knock people off the course, which I wasn't particularly good at. I was generally more focused on like avoiding the other cars and just try to win through speed, because it's a bit risky. Like, because the car can ultimately just explode and it's game over. Then I never really tried doing a Road Rash sort of impression so much. But that is a way to play it. And that's just another thing about the kind of depth of this game. There's different ways to go about how you're playing it. You can be really aggressive with our drivers. You can just try and focus on speed. Some cars are kind of better at the whole, what do you call it, when you're turning.
Drifting.
Like kind of drifting. Like the heavier cars are good at drifting. Lighter cars stick better to the road. So there's plenty of options, plenty of kind of different playstyles to kind of keep you interested.
I've got to admit, you've got me thinking about this game and wanting to revisit it myself, even if it's not going to be a recommendation. I've got a feeling it probably is, but with that Grand National analogy, I'm like, I want to check this out again, man. That's an interesting way to think about it.
Aye, one of my pals doing the pub gave me a tip. He was like, aye, put on the 10 past two at Mute City. put on Captain Falcon, man. He's an outsider. But the only downside, really, and Andy brought this up at the very beginning, was that this is a one-player game, so you need to bear that in mind when you're going in. It's very unusual for racing games to not have a multiplayer mode. Couch co-op is kind of, I think, the bread and butter for these sort of games. I think this, again, comes down to your performance that we're talking about. They really did try hard to get this running at 60 frames per second. That was their kind of main goal when programming this. And if you're on the N64, you can't just have two-player. You need to have four-player.
You ever try to play back GoldenEye on original hardware these days? Play it for 20 frames a second.
Aye.
On the Xbox version, it's been updated, but you don't really notice it. But even if you were playing fucking Lilith Wars as well, the more players you had, the less kind of frames and performance you had, and you couldn't have like four levels, you could just have like a light version of the level.
A couch co-op is what your N64 is all about. That's probably what it's going to be most fondly remembered by people, you know, sleepovers or student bed sits or whatever, secondhand Nintendo, four-player Mario Kart, four-player GoldenEye, etc.
The key difference between having a multi-tap for the PlayStation and having the N64 was that the designers, the games designers, made games to suit the four ports on N64.
Aye, because it comes straight out of the box with the four.
His multi-tap is like bolted on, so you might have an extra mode that's just kind of bolted on to the original game, but the N64, it was like converted into the actual.
Oh, aye, the N64 is better for multiplayer. In my opinion, PlayStation's better for single player. You know, you can sit and battle through Metal Gear Solid or your Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, blah, blah, blah. I think that's a better experience for playing on your Todd.
164, you can play Quest 64.
Hey, Majora's Mask, big up the postie.
We've got to revisit Quest 64, man. That was a lost game. That was one I was going to cover years and years ago, and I put the fucking effort in to play it. So I'm going to need to speak about it at some point. So F-Zero X, with that big caveat in mind, like if you want a multiplayer racing game on the N64, you're going to want to be playing Mario Kart, probably. If you want to be listening to Jungle and firing lasers at people and looking at stuff designed by Aphex Twin, then play Wipeout. But I would also make a very strong case for playing F-Zero X because it's great. I had a great time with it. It took me a bit of a while to get there, as I said with my fucking tortured penis analogy earlier on. But it's good fun. Smooth gameplay. Lots of kind of strategic choices and that. And just bombing around listening to heavy metal going at 1,000 miles an hour is pretty good fun.
I think Wipeout misses, for me, wacky characters. I don't get to personify my motor by thinking about a mad wee alien driving it and Wipeout in a day in F-Zero.
Wipeout's a bit quite edgy in that, and it's all about a space age version of F1.
I've got a big soft spot for F-Zero, obviously, because that kind of era of music and that and the whole aesthetic of it is pretty cool. I feel like there's possibly like a perfect game that sits somewhere in between these two, to be honest.
Aye.
Have you ever played Extreme G?
No.
For the N64, I don't know if it was ahead of PlayStation, but it's kind of what you're saying there, in between the two. It's like a cartoon of yours in a white boot almost, where you went, like, these bikes.
Is that the ones where you're kind of going up like pipes, like kind of snowboarding sort of pipes and that?
Aye. Kind of like another one's Trick Style for the Dreamcast. I think I've mentioned that before.
Are you called that Space Age Tony Hawk?
Well, it's actually more a racing game than a Tony Hawk game. It's just the only thing they had in Tony Hawk's got in common is the fact they're on boards.
I'll give you a peek behind the curtain. Both Andy and McCormick re-listened to that Shenmue 2 episode we did years ago before this, and Andy name drops Trick Style of Space Age Tony Hawk. So I'm no surprised at all to see it pop up in this episode.
Well, Trick Style was one of the games, one of the playable demos on the original.
Yes, I played it. I remember playing it in Curry's when the Dreamcast first came out.
Oh, I was in a Blockbuster one, but these things are it was incredible. This the Dreamcast, you're only reading about it, and then you see it in its person, you know what I mean? You can never afford it, it's right out your depth, man, but here you are with a pad, you know.
Misspent youth in the old Blockbuster, eh? Andy, how many hours a week do you think you spent in Blockbuster?
All I can remember is they must have thought I was, I don't know, a troubled wee boy, right? Because I remember one time a WWF Attitude had just came out.
Aye.
Big wrestling heat at the time. And I remember going up and asking the guy, like, what time? I've got a couple of stories left. Guy said, I said, what time's it due back? And he said, the guy said, time up to closing. So I walked about this fucking shop just reading the back of fucking DVD. Well, it would have been VHS and DVD covers at the time, I'd imagine. And it came about like 6 hours into his shift, and the guy felt pity on me and came over and took my number and said he'd phone me when he got handed in.
Thought you were going to say made you a cup of hot chocolate and asked you if you wanted to phone the social.
But aye, so I went home and about just fucking bang on before 10 o'clock when it shut, it phones me and says, I'll stay open for you. That's just how legendary video shops were. And they stayed open, they go over and get WWF Attitude, man, aye. The only crux to this story is that I tried to return it with ISS. Oh. And I think they took it as the guy actually came to my door to get the original game back. So I was a thieving wee bastard. And then I didn't get any favours off him again.
You've burnt a bridge there.
That was some pure like Artful Dodger style long con you were pulling on this guy. Convinced him you were this poor, like, poor waif. And then you fucking bump him for it for WWF Attitude.
I got about a week out of it, man, before they could be asked to come and get it. So I'd done everything, man. Made pay-per-views and all. That's another episode.
Aye, we'll do another wrestling special in 2028, I promise. Right, that brings us on to our final episode of the evening. That brings us on to our final game
that's
of the evening.
Peek behind the curtain. We have got...
No, this has been continuity. This has been one episode. It's been smooth sailing. No problems here. Our final game of the evening, Parappa the Rapper for PlayStation. I picked this because I played this an awful lot. This was a pre-chip game for me. So this was something, you got it on a demo disc, and a demo disc was just Master Onion, the first level. And I played it over and over again. And then I remember eventually getting my mum to buy it, basically. And I played this Hunters. I don't know how well it holds up. I think there's a case to be made that the rhythm mechanic in it has got a wee bit of jank to it. It's a wee bit broken, but it's very much a rose-tinted specs experience for me. I just enjoy the aesthetics, the goofy wee tunes and all that. So I thought it would be an interesting one for Andy to look at. He likes weird games. How did you get on?
Well, weird games, man. This is going to be like a yin and yang. I'm going to give you a wee spoiler. You ever had a game where you can't even like it? It's broke to fuck, but you can't even like it.
There's something
it's
about just, it.
Aye, man, you kind of hate it. I mean, all right, we've been heavy Sonic heavy, and we've made a wee kind of decision to not go back to Sonic, but I'll have a 5 second blip. Sonic Adventure 2, case in point, I suppose, right? You kind of hate it.
And it's did you fancy telling us what soap shoes are?
That's what I've been, right, for you. Fucking hell with complaints and everything. But anyways, this game is as much the same. I kind of take my eyes off the fucking thing. There's good vibes blasting out your cathode ray tube when this is on.
Andy, would it be fair to say you've got a lot of time for a mascot?
Yes.
I think Parappa, there's a case for him being an early PlayStation 1 mascot. You had Lara Croft, Crash, Abe's Odyssey. Parappa might be up there on that Mount Rushmore along with them, right? He's well designed. There's just a charm to him.
There's something about him now. I don't know where to talk about Parappa first. I'll talk about my wee bump bit before the thing, but I wanted to talk about what kind of game it is first. It's a rhythm game.
Go for it.
I've got a bit of a history with rhythm games. I was never good at them, but I never really tried them, because usually they're a bit of a brass neck, wasn't it? If you were out in the arcade in the Millport and there was a dancing stage, Mega Mix and all that. I remember dance mats were pretty big as well. You could get a shot of your wee cousin's dance mat or something like that. And that was my sort of idea of what these games were.
They've got a dancing stage Mega Mix in that DQ64. Merchant Square, and that is like the ideal place to put it, because if you've been out all day on the piss and then you go in, you're full of confidence for going on a dance mat. I had a great time on it.
Well, a good story I've got is my Uncle Frank, right, who's this big stoic guy, sits in a chair. It looks a bit like Father Jack Hackett. Father Ted, aye. Hey, this is drink and show you scar. This is appendix scar, but he says it was the Japs that done it in that, right?
I see where you get it from.
So could possibly do a cleaner reading on that where you say Japanese, but well, you were quoting somebody.
I was quoting somebody else. But yes, he used to always tell us that. Not when he's playing Domino's. But for some reason, we were doing them for a meal, doing largs, and they let all the Wayans go to the arcade. So for whatever happened, he's been out for a few jars, and he's wandered in with Uncle Pat, and the two of them wandered in. And he's had a shot of dance, man. He's going, he's a shot of his fucking piss, man. And everybody watched him, he's stinking. And he goes on the dance, man, and starts fucking jiving to Boyzone, man.
Drinking fucking double Scottish leaders for 6 hours and Ruth and Ebers.
I'm looking for everything after you, and started hitting on me. I tell you to get back in the motor, man. It made Megan marks over the banisters and that. It was horrible.
That's what largs is all about.
Aye, that's the thing that stands out when somebody says rhythm games. They're a good laugh, right? They're always a good laugh. You had a couple, McCormick, kind of different rhythm games. You had Vib Ribbon, where you would put in your own disc, you know, to play the same music.
Vib Ribbon's great. I love Vib Ribbon.
Vib Ribbon's, aye, that's possibly the best tune.
I like that one. My favourite one was probably Rez for the Dreamcast. A crazy game. A game I really want to go on a show, but we've all played it. It's like a 3D shooter. Probably my favourite genre games. Well, one of them anyway. And it's in this kind of space age techno music. And it's got a wireframe aesthetic, like Battlezone, the old arcade games or something.
Aye, it's a shooter, but like everything that happens is synced to the music.
Aye.
You're kind of creating music as you go, almost.
The games that come with a gimmick. Usually they have some sort of gimmick. Samba de Amigo came with the Rattlers, the, what do you call them, the Banacas, the Donkey Kong game for the
Bongos one.
Bongos one. So this, put up with the rapper, this is the same. It's a rhythm game, but it doesn't come with a tangible gimmick. The gimmick is within its design, I believe, for this game.
I don't remember an earlier rhythm game than this. I'm sure they've existed for a while, but this is like the first one, I think, I remember ever seeing.
I'll tell you, I think they did exist in arcades in Japan. I think probably the ancestor of Parappa, if it's anywhere, it's going to be there.
Aye, possibly. I think you're probably right there, man, aye. I mean, Dancing Stage is based on an out game, isn't it? A very out game where you had to click when something was going down vertically and you had to click it in time.
The dance mat, they're only part of the kind of descendants of this. You've also got things like Guitar Hero, look into how it developed. Aye, Parappa's considerably more basic than these things. You're controlling it all with the pad.
Aye. So what I was saying is, I think the gimmick, this one, if you look at sort of, you've got to have something. You can't just be tapping the screen and looking at buttons, because that's shite. You've got to have something else. So we've talked about the tangible things, but I think this one's design. Am I right in saying it looks like one of them books comes to life things? It's like a pop-up book where
kinda the characters are all made out of paper. Aye,
so it's like, you remember them storybooks you used to get, maybe the middle page, like a full on fucking
pop up
Kuban would pop up with Kuzma and stuff. It's kind of reminds me of that a wee bit, only 10 times cooler. Everything's worth looking at. All the characters are very basic, but they're it's that way, they're that basic and well done. It's just, you can't take your eyes off it, and it's just like crack to look at. It's brilliant. It's a really, really beautiful looking game.
They've got a look kind of a wee bit like a street art, or like almost graffiti in a way.
Yeah.
Not in an edgy way, not like a kind of like 90s New York or that, but more like just the kind of colourful, bold colours and big, thick, dark lines in that.
That's it. That's exactly what I was thinking. So it's like Jet Set Radio or something.
Yeah.
Cell shaded. Is that it? Cell shaded?
Technically, no, but in a way, aye.
Aye, so it's got all that going on, and it's just, if you were to Google it, you would see exactly what I'm talking about.
How would you summarise the story of Parappa the Rapper? Because I've always found it quite difficult to follow, to be perfectly honest.
So Parappa the Rapper inhabits a town that is nameless, I believe.
Is this coming from Wikipedia?
No.
I thought I heard you hacking the Matrix.
I'm trying to remember if it's got, but I don't think it does. But basically, it's a town where Parappa Rappa inhabits as a child, essentially. And he kind of values, his whole value system is based on getting together with a female interest called Sunny Funny.
Parappa wants to winch a wee lassie that's a sunflower. Parappa's a dog.
A
His other pal's a bear and his other pal's a cat.
They're all kids. They're all kids just out having fun.
Although old enough to do his driving lessons.
He's a teenager.
Ah, teenager, kind of, doesn't he carry on? It's just Wayne's out having a laugh and trying to learn to drive. Sonny Funny is a Daisy, just a simple looking Daisy, the big eyes and that. And for that bit of apples this week, and a dog looking motherfucker with I don't know if you've ever seen Badly Drawn Boy, but he's got a badly drawn boy hat. I don't know what you call him.
Like a wee beanie.
A beanie.
Aye. Parappa's on a journey of self-actualisation and self-belief. Parappa needs to gain the confidence to go with Sonny Funny, the sunflower. And to do this, he learns karate to stand up to bullies, gets his driver's license. Him and a frog sell things at the forum. He makes a cake with a chicken, and then he has a rap battle against all his teachers to go in and do a shite.
The reason why he starts to have these sort of incel influences in his arc is because...
I don't know if I would go incel there. Do you reckon Parappa's an incel?
Well, I think it turns into a wee bit of a self-loathing character because there's a clearly older character called Jimmy Chin. What's his name?
Joe Chin.
Joe Chin's kind of, he's got it all in Parappa's eyes. He's got the nice car, he's got good chat and that.
Rich Diana. Well,
Joe,
the best
Joe Chin, Rich Diana, he reminds me of somebody. He's probably got a pair of soap shoes.
He swaggers in that. He's sitting in a cafe and Parappa's obviously trying to chat the wee lassie up, and then Big Joe Chin powers in, big fucking chin, nice club on that, I suppose. Big attitude, come with me, you know that, come with me. And I think, obviously, Sonny Funny would prefer to be with Parappa, but this guy's like personality is so all-encompassing that it sort of doesn't give a choice. He's a bit forceful at times.
They all find him a bit tedious, so I would say Parappa isn't an incel, and this can be evidence from his catchphrase, which is McCormick.
Yeah, I know. I gotta believe.
He's gotta believe.
Gotta believe.
Whenever a problem comes up, he goes, no, do you know what? Hey, bother, man, I can do this. I've got to believe in myself. And then he does a driving lesson, or he gets into the toilet and does a shite.
Aye, that's pretty much it. So he's a paper-thin rapping dog, determined to procure the heart of a flower-like girl who has a crush on named Sonny Funny. Obviously,
yes.
Jim's trying to get himself in there. He's a dog today as well. Now, for some reason, the game then sort of takes that premise and says that Parappa Rappa can resolve these issues he's having with his love interest if he becomes a great rapper. And to do that, he goes to learn rap off of four different rap masters.
He's learning karate and he's learning cake making and things like that. He knows how to rap. They're using rap to teach him.
Right. So he knows rap, right? He's going to do certain tests. So there's karate. It was the first level with a man called a big onion head cunt
karate gear.
Karate gear. And he's got a big onion head. The onion is stinking because you can see it coming off him and that. But for some reason, he's a karate master in the town. And Parappa goes to him to have this wrap off, whereby you're introduced to your first input in the game, where you've got to try and rap on time. And when I say on time, I mean whenever the game wants.
Yeah, there's something about the kind of timing of this, which time is obviously is essential for a rhythm game. And whatever it is to do with the hardware or some sort of lag, it feels like you kind of have to press the buttons like slightly after when you're told to.
Aye.
It can be quite hard to get your head around.
What happened was, so chop chop master onion skits of kick punch, it's all in the mind. If you want to test me, I'm sure you'll find the things they'll teach you is sure to beat you. Nevertheless, you've got a lesson from teacher. And then it goes kick, and this is kind of your tutorial where you've got to learn kick, kick, punch, punch.
Aye, it's a call and response thing.
Aye.
So he'll deal the buttons in a certain order and then you have to follow him after on the next line.
Exactly. So kick will be triangle, maybe punch will be X, block might be square, and then you get air and hard buttons as well for like fancy chop and fancy block. And then he obviously makes it more difficult by saying things like, don't get cocky, it's going to get rocky, we're going to move you down to the next jockey. And then he starts like showing that you can actually call two commands at one time. You have to try and like double up on them, and then it starts getting a bit confusing though when you've got to like two buttons at once and stuff. And so his first level is kind of like a tutorial, but it's still fucking hard. Your scoring system works as a wee notifier on the right hand side as I think it's 4 ratings for your rapping so far on that level.
Yes.
So you've got, is it awesome or very good? Awesome.
You rapping cool.
You rapping good. You rapping good.
You rapping bad. And you rapping awful.
So it goes cool, good, bad, and awful. And to complete each one, you've got to get at least good to pass on to the next.
The first time you play a stage, you can't get cool. So if you beat Master Onion with good, you can then go and replay it. And if you fuck about and freestyle a bit, then if your score's good enough, it'll bump you up to cool. And then you play a version of the level where you freestyle.
I didn't get that, man. What I noticed was, right, I'm going to beats, man. I think my neighbours were off my head, man, because I was like, rotting it up, you know? But it wasn't working. I could tell it was what I think. And you've got to start kind of listening to Parappa's voice more than looking at what's on the screen, because when you press a button, he'll vocalise what he's trying to do. So he'll go, punch, kick, punch. And you've got to try and make him say the full word and like the right beat. It's very unintuitive, man. But it's Moorish, it's addictive. And you know what? It's good fun, and you can tell you start getting into this rap a wee bit. As I said, you start to find it a bop and all that. You like Master Onion, not Chop Chop Master Onion. I don't know, you just got a good vibe. And you say, right, I'm going to give you next level a shot, being aware that it's probably going to get a bit harder. So the story progresses, and as you said, the next part of trying to impress Sonny Funny is to become a driver. Now, we all know people, boy racers across the country, a lot of them done that, didn't they? 16, they were in a car. That was it, man. And it was all to impress wee lassies and become the main DJ at the Waterfront Disco. that was basically it, wasn't it? So, Instructor Mussolini's rap, much the same. So,
hold on a minute there.
Is that her name?
It is. She's a moose that's a driving instructor, and her name's Mussolini.
I think that's a bit unfair on a driver. She seems alright, man.
You only like a moose woman because I was watching you do this on a stream, and this is the only level I think I seen you do your first try. So no wonder you've got a soft spot for her.
It was pretty good. I started to get quite good, aye, for like 5-10 minutes.
One of the weaker songs, if I'm being honest. My favourite's just coming.
Oh, I don't know.
It's more frantic, this level. This level's more cinematic. You see them blasting through the wee tune and all that, and you get a wee kind of flavour of what a tune looks like. But their arms and legs are flying out of fucking sunroof, and they're going back. It's not a pass, man, whatever that is. But fucking, he's definitely get what? What are you allowed in a driving test? Majors and minors?
Oh, like 3 or 5 minors or something. He said a couple.
He's up there in the hundreds for minors, man, aye. Before we even look at majors. So he's failed, man. But very simple stuff in this one. You've not got the funkiness of Master Onion. It's more like step on the gas, step on the brakes.
You've got a bit of piano.
That's right, yep. Pretty self-explanatory. I'm sitting in the car, I want you to show me if you can get far. So again, you're just doing the, you're bopping, you're just trying to input the triangle, square, both, and keep up with it. Listen as well, make sure he's trying to do it right. Keep an eye on your notifiers. If you're at normal, then you know you're up there, you can get it good. If you get it bad, you know there's still plenty of opportunity to get up in that. Pretty good. And at the same time, you're watching the wee cartoon that's happening on screen as well. It's pretty funny. But aye, there's nothing really funny about our song, to be honest. Check and turn the signals to the right. Check and turn the signals to the right.
She makes you stop the motor because she forgot to shut the door during the driving test. It's pretty wacky.
Pretty unprofessional.
Aye, it's Mussolini, but I mean, they've even tried to make like, just give her one eyebrow and that, like, just to look fascist, I suppose.
So she wears a uniform, right, and she's meant to be pretty stern, and her name's a fascist allegory, obviously.
What they've done is, this is like the only authority figure in the game, isn't it? Like the driving instructor.
Aye.
And they went for Tonto to like demonstrate authority.
But you know what? She's
a fucking Italian fascist.
I would also say, we can put this on your Japan watch board, because although this character is called Mussolini, not a baddie. A good character, I would say, almost.
Interesting.
A positive figure.
Interesting.
I'm not even fucking touching that. this is a good bit. My favourite character comes up after this. I think you know.
Everybody's favourite character, come on. A bold prince flea swallow.
He's my favourite character.
No,
as well.
Before that.
Oh.
So, anyways, fucking Parappa passes driving test, right? Magic.
Aye.
So he goes to pick up guess who? Sonny Funny, before Big Jimmy Chin can get in there. Joe Chin, sorry. This is when Parappa crashes his motor.
Aye.
He gets pounded and he's got to go and tell his feather, right? What's his dad's name? Something, Mr. the Rapper?
Well, I always think of Parappa's da as Willy Loman from Death of a Salesman, based on when I played this game with Leo. There's that bit where he imagines his dad going, "Oh, Parappa, my car, I've got..." You know, as if a life insurance, he's worth more dead than alive, do you know what I mean? He's a really fucking... he's a really tragic figure.
It looks like somebody that would have PGA Tour and he's wee pile. he's a gambler or something, man. He's got a wee like pork pie hat. He's got suit pants in the shirt, but he's obviously lost the jacket and I gave him a poker.
You only see Parappa's dad for 10 seconds and you remember him and how fucking pathetic he is.
Aye, he's like, "I hope you're ready to pay for anything, Parappa, fuck's sake, man. Can't we just smash this motor? I've got enough to fucking think about." He's like, the wee guy's...
Is he your favourite character?
I liked him. I liked him. It's just, I've seen this tape before and I really feel sorry for them. But it's a sin because everybody's having a great time in this wonderful, happy Quickville tune and the dad's just fucking right up a wall, man.
That's why Parappa's got to believe, because he doesn't know what to turn out like his dad.
Maybe when it is. Maybe Parappa's life is so bad that he just disassociates, man. And then he kind of gets a touch of reality when he smashes his motor.
Let's put a wee detective's cap on here for a minute, right? There's a few signifiers that maybe Parappa doesn't have the happiest life. Like, in the first level, before you learn karate, when the bullies hassle Sonny Funny and Parappa and his pals, they're in Burger King, McDonald's, aye, basically. It goes down the line, his wee mate PJ Bear, what's he like? He's getting a chocolate milkshake and 10 burgers and blah, ha, ha, it's funny, he's chubby and that. Then the rest of them, they get normal orders, right? Then it comes to Parappa. The wee man can only afford to get a water because his dad can't fucking pay the bills. He's obviously been laid off or something.
So, in that situation, obviously, any good son would go and befriend a rapping frog to try and help pay back a debt. So, the rapping frog is called Prince
Flea Swallow.
Prince Flea Swallow, who...
Flea Swallow.
Flea Swallow, who is a local vendor at a selling shop.
It's like a car boot sale. What do they call that? Oh, the flea market, aye. Flea Swallow flea market, aye.
Flea market, aye. So he sells anything. Oh, aye, now I get it. I didn't get it then. Basically, Prince Flea Swallow takes you through the art of selling and trading, buying and selling and stuff. So he's talking about, in his rap, "Rar Rebit, I'm working in the flea market swelly. I've been working here since my mama was a baby." Now that line kind of fucked my brain a wee bit. "I've been working here since my mama was a baby." It's a biological reference to them having consciousness before they fully turn into frogs. Or is it just I'm putting too much into it?
It's just a kind of funny non sequitur thing.
Aye, he's having a laugh. It's just an idiom for he's been working there for ages.
Okay. And he says, "Just because the rhythm is slow, that don't mean that you can't flow."
The rhythm is slow because this is a reggae song.
I was just going to say this thing's a reggae song, actually. It's probably my favourite song in the...
It's my favourite in this one, for sure.
The one, so I suppose I should play my song card right now, man. This is Prince Flea Swallow's rap.
"I'm working in the flea market so early. I've been working here since my mama was a baby. Just because the rhythm is slow, that don't mean that you can't flow. In the rain or in the snow,
in the rain or in the snow,
got the funky flow,
got the funky flow.
In the rain or in the snow,
in the rain or in the snow,
got the funky flow,
got the funky flow.
All you ever need is to be nice and friendly.
All you ever need is to be nice and friendly.
All you ever need is to be nice and friendly.
All you ever need is to be nice and friendly.
Remember, strike it rich, the key is love. Save everybody from way up above. I can sell a bottle cap like this.
I will try to sell a cap like this.
I can sell a bottle cap like this.
I will try to sell a cap like this.
I'll never dream it would be like this. I'm the number one ruler of the seven seas. The skunk over here will bring you luck.
The skunk over here will bring you luck.
The bump over here comes with the truck.
The bump over here comes with the truck.
Oh yes, I had a lot of fun. I meet a lot of bucks and now I'm on the run. In the rain or in the snow,
in the rain.
something that I never told before. Listen this. I have never sold everything, everything.
I have never sold everything, everything.
You have never sold everything, everything.
You have never sold everything, everything.
Money, money, money is all you need.
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 Your father's gonna be very proud of you. Let me know if you have another flea market. I will help you, or you will help me.
You got that right, teacher. Thanks a lot.
I mean,
gonna be stuck in my head all night.
Well, I can't say anything, right? Because that was fucking amazing. And anything I say is just not gonna do that justice.
It takes a turn, the Bold Prince Flea Swallows song, because, you know, he's talking about all you need is love and just chill, sell all this shite, but at the end of the day, possessions don't matter on that. And then the last verse, he starts saying, money, money, money is all you need.
Aye, I know,
he's a fraud.
A capitalist, aye. But,
he is, aye, at heart.
Starts off, he goes, like, I'm going to teach you that work ethic first. So he goes, in the rain or in the snow, as you heard there. So that's when you've got to do your button presses, do. But, as aye. I said, it's not intuitive, it's not correctly correlated with beat. So just trial and error again, try to keep up. I don't know, there is a knack to it somewhere, it's in there. There's a knack to it in there, but you find yourself deviating for it a lot.
I don't know if it's muscle memory. Back in the day, most of the levels, first or second try, apart from where we'll find the cross that Andy had to bear was the next level. The level that everybody gets stuck at, the chicken. The chicken is one that I still have to have repeated tries at before I can get through it as well.
I suppose we'll move on to the chicken then. If we move on to Prince Flea Swallow, who says, your papa's going to be very proud of you. Let me know if you have another flea market. If you're going to set one up, I'll help you. Or you can come and help me. Ha ha. So, fucks off. The next part of the story is that it's Sonny Funny's birthday coming up. And
right.
They all rock, paper, scissors to see who's buying the present.
Aye.
And
it's Rusty.
Aye, it's Rusty. Rusty's buying the present.
He'd be a good Parappa the Rapper character, actually.
He would, you could put the wee bonnet on him and that. It'd be a good Halloween costume.
You're tasked with getting the birthday cake for the party. So you've got to go and try and find a birthday cake. You know what trouble is? Can you guess what it is, lads?
He's got to believe.
He's got to believe, but at the moment, he can't seem to believe that he can make a cake.
Oh, he buys a nice cake. He goes to a shop and he goes, I'm not fucking about it. I'm going to just get a classic, a nice cake, and then something happens, he trips and falls, cake's ruined.
Aye, but then Big Jimmy Chin, or Joey Chin, comes in, and this is the biggest sexual innuendo or euphemism in the game, where he comes with a cake, right? But he opens up the cake, and it fucking shoots into the air about 40 tears, and a big phallic mass of sponge, where he starts talking about like, how the first like couple of inches of cake is the first date and all that, and then by the end it's like they've spawned a young team. It's right in front of your face, man. So put up that rapper, fully threatened, says I'm gonna have to go and I'm gonna bake the best cake she's ever fucking seen, man.
And my cake will have girth, which is very important.
So then it goes to the next rap master, who is called Cheap Cheap the Cooking Chicken.
Yes.
She's clucking terrible.
she's quite stressful. She's presenting a cooking show. Basically, you follow along with the show to bake a cake. But when you start fucking up on this level, and you will, Cheap Cheap jumps out the telly and starts shouting at you. It's quite frustrating and intimidating.
This is my least favourite character for this game. And she's just got that fucking... things have got a stupid look, like a pure mental look. Like I'm thinking about... You know, if somebody puts just a normal guy puts a Spider-Man mask on, there's something inherently mental about it. I get the same vibes off this chicken, but it's stupid
with that. I don't think you started off having total negative associations with the chicken. I think you've just played this level 40 times and now the sight of her makes you fucking sick.
I mean, she's barking orders at you, right? That's the worst thing in the world, right? But you can take that, right? You can take that. Doesn't matter if it's a fucking... It could be your uncle, it could be your boss, whatever. They're shooting barking orders. It's never a pleasant experience.
Also, you've got all the other characters. I think it would be fair to say are working class, whereas Cheap Cheap, she gives me middle class vibes.
Aye. You're an idiot. But anyways, what is it with the ingredients, man? She starts flying fucking shrimp. What's the other thing? Shrimp and sausage.
Perches and clams and
clams
things like
and
that.
Clams and perches and all that. And like, that's just not going to get you in front of fucking Jimmy Chin, is it? Joe Chin.
It's a seafood cake. So after Parappa successfully makes the seafood cake, when they have the picnic for Sonny's birthday or whatever, wee Parappa likes this cake quite a lot. He must have 4 or 5 bits of seafood cake. Maybe again he's not getting enough to eat in the house, so he's stuffing this seafood cake into his gob, and it means when he gets left alone with Sonny for an intimate moment, he's got to do a shite. It comes back on him, because maybe he's not cooked the cake well enough. And this is when you get stage 5, which is like a boss rush mode, right, where you have to do a verse against each one of your previous teachers to get ahead of them.
It's such a funny concept for a boss rush, because they're all standing in front of him waiting to go to the toilet, and he has to rap to convince him to let him go in front.
Aye, what is it with that? Like, I got to the first one, but I couldn't get by that one. I didn't actually get to the very last bit, but the bit when they're all standing on the stage rapping, I was just so pissed off for the fucking chicken previously that I sort of fell out with the game a wee bit.
After Parappa successfully negotiates the queue, defeats all his teachers, the moose who's been sitting in a motor for 4 days, that's why she needs a toilet, and the frog sold his last toilet, so blah, blah, blah. There's lots of wacky wee reasons why they all need a shite or a piss.
I remember the frog going, I had the shits this morning, I don't really want to tell you the details.
Aye, but more or less, after that, a spider sends Parappa a letter and says, Mum will play a gig, wee man, you can be the headliner and we'll put on a rap concert. Your wee mate, PJ Bear, we'll get him on the decks and that, and it'll be minted. So stage 6 is Parappa headlining a rap show, bizarrely, with a woman that taught him how to drive, an onion that taught him karate, a chicken that taught cake making for the telly. They're all there doing verses and that, going, everybody say ho, it's pure Sugar Hill Gang level, like, old school rap.
See, I done that one night, and I remember I looked fucking Spider on them on the stage, and I think to myself, what the fuck is going on, like? I'm still raging, man, and I see if they done like I take that in 1995, right, and the chicken was Robbie Williams and left the band, I could probably pallet it, but just seeing its stupid fucking bill in its eyeballs, man, I was like, fucking, nah, he even kept his apron on that.
Can we do full disclosure here? Did you beat the chicken, or did you look at these other levels on YouTube?
I beat the chicken, but I couldn't get by this one.
did you?
Just...
All right, I'll take your word for it.
I hate the fucking chicken, and the fact that she's in 2 different levels after that day, I just couldn't do it, man. And I love everything about this game. I knew I beat that chicken level quite a few times. I knew I did, and I knew that it was good enough to get a pass.
Interestingly, on PS4, they brought out a full remaster of this. They didn't change a lot about it, but they just did it with a modern like a paint. They did new graphics and that for it, but it looks the same, and they fixed it, and it feels weird playing Parappa the Rapper when it works, because if you play the remake and then you play the old one, it's the clearest cut example you've got to say the old Parappa the Rapper was broke. Like, there's a weirdness
to it. I think the chicken specifically is a combination of, like, it's a dodgy timing that you talked about. The song's also quite fast and it's very syncopated. It's like half the beat a lot of the time. So it's kind of mere, you're not just hitting like 1, 2, it's like and. It's like that makes it even more difficult, I think.
Something tells me that nothing to do with like the nuance of the game developers, man. It's not as if like fucking, I don't know, the drummer for Rush, whatever his name is, the drummer in the world, was sitting like figuring out all the syncopation and like wee kind of obscure beats and all that. I just think it wasn't fused properly with gameplay, and I think it fucked us up a wee bit. And like, there was something in that level, man. Because I got it good. And the fucking Egypt fucking just put me right into bad in the last bit of the fucking level numerous times. I don't know, man. Are you allowed to be raging with that? Because it's such a brilliant game in all other respects, but that chicken just really fucking got my goat, man.
They tried something a wee bit unique and different, right? And I've been meaning to bring this up as well. We would be remiss if we didn't, because it's not often we bring up big achievements, right? Like, Andy, when you got a flawless victory on Kintaro with Johnny Cage when me and you had been trying to beat Mortal Kombat 2 for months. One night in my parents' house down in Greenock, me and McCormick were sat up and drinking cans and just playing computer games, you know, firing on a bit of this and that, as you do when you're sitting drinking a carry out, or as we do. And we thought, when was the last time you played Parappa the Rapper? So we're having a laugh going through these levels and stuff. McCormick, after we'd been drinking all day, I should point out, beat a chicken first try. Never seen it done before or since.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy.
Not sure I could do it again, to be honest.
It's a bit like myself with the second level. I was like, oh, I didn't even mean that, but I'll take it, you know what I mean? Yes, what can I say? You can't sit here and say this game is more than absolute spectacle. To be admired.
It's got that sort of, I know we're going back to it again, soap shoes, soap shoes, soap shoes. It's because it's very much in the consciousness at the minute. That Sonic Adventure 2 thing of being broken in places and frustrating and a bit crap at times, but the overall package of it, you can't help. It can't help but make you smile at the end of the day.
In a game, I mean, a rhythm game, can you think of many more, like, this is going to be controversial, man, but if you were just to have like a rhythm game without something, the gimmick, the like perfect gimmick, but rhythm games are kind of boring, aren't they? And the same thing over and over again without some sort of gimmick attached to them.
This game had two sequels, Umjammer Lammy, which was also on the PlayStation, and that's Parappa, but instead you play a lassie that plays a guitar, and there's more levels, and it works a bit better. It was like if they took a second punt at Parappa and fixed a lot of the problems with it. And then it had a sequel on the PS2, which was Parappa the Rapper 2.
You remember the Spice Girls were massive in the UK and they brought out a game as well that was a rip-off of Parappa the Rapper.
It had interesting graphics. I always thought the graphical style on that was quite interesting.
Chibi Spice Girls.
Aye.
Certainly tried, but it was kind of like a 3D version of Parappa the Rapper with all the kind of soul sucked out of it. Back, aye. PlayStation Classic. I'm not going to sit here and slate Parappa the Rapper. No way, I'm not qualified for that. That chicken can suck my boys, man. Honestly, I've done it. I'll try it again at some point, but my bottle of hate can only dry out so far. And it's my advanced age, so it'll fill up eventually. Aye. And I'll be able to use it on another game again at some point and just pull over a lead.
There you go. Right, well, we got on to the next episode. We are going to do a kind of loose theme whereby, I don't know, we've been doing a lot of PlayStation N64 games recently, so we're going to take it right back and look at three 8-bit games. So, going to right back, but before our time, but plenty of classics to look at. Now, Andy, you are picking for myself. What have I got?
So, I thought I would give you something fucking left field, man. A wee NES number, a wee 8-bit NES number, NES. It's called Little Samson. Don't let any of them fool you, mate. Fucking quite something. I'm sure you'll enjoy that.
I'll make sure I don't let him chop my hair off. McCormick, you have got Andy. What we got?
So, we were talking about Nintendo's B-sides, and this is very much one of these, but still a pretty good game. It's Kid Icarus, also on the NES.
A nice one. Heard it, never played it.
No. We're covering there with those two. I would say two cornerstones of the 8-bit era. We've got a platformer, and we've got something quite arcadey, a screen clearer, kind of working your way up. Kid Icarus wouldn't look out of place in an arcade cabinet. I was originally going to game McCormick Sonic the Hedgehog Triple Trouble for the Master System, but as I say, I think we've been a bit Sonic heavy lately. So I'm going to pivot instead and also go for something for the Nintendo, or more accurately, the Famicom, and it's Final Fantasy III, one of my favourites in the Final Fantasy series. The last one to come out on the old Nintendo. Yeah, well worth a look.
For the benefit of one American listener, they got a different Final Fantasy III, didn't they? Something like that. So this is the actual Final Fantasy III.
Yes. We're not talking about Final Fantasy VI, which was released as Final Fantasy III in America. We're talking about the all Final Fantasy III.
And I'm looking forward to this. A rare Final Fantasy that I've not actually played. Should be interesting. Aye.
So, all that's left to say is up the workers.
Up the fucking workers.
Up the workers.
This is like when fucking Father Ted's like, just play the fucking note. We've been over this again and again. We were all going to pick something to say at the end of episodes because we don't end them right. They don't end well. I had a phrase. You had a phrase. Right. McCormick had a phrase.
What was mine again?
It's no working.
What was it again? Sorry, mine.
I can't remember.
You had one job and it was being in charge of your own phrase.
Well, we just got to go fast.
See you later.